From a secret location in room 100 of 540 Jack Gibbs Boulevard, this is Craft. I'm your host, Doug Dangler. Chang-Rae Lee's first novel, Native Speaker, won numerous awards, including the Penn Hemingway Award. His 2010 novel, The Surrendered, won the 2011 Dayton Literary Peace Prize and was a finalist for the 2011 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction. His latest novel, On Such a Full Sea, is a meditation on a possible dystopic future of the United States, in which Chinese immigrants have been relocated to cities in the U.S. to work on collectives producing food for wealthy enclaves called charters. Its protagonist, Fan, is a Chinese-American diver in a Baltimore, now called Bmore, fish farm, who leaves the security of her life there to search for her disappeared lover, Reg. Welcome to Craft, Chang-Rae Lee.
Hi, Doug.
After several very successful contemporary novels, what attracted you to write the dystopic fiction of your latest, On Such a Full Sea?
Well, I was looking about for, obviously, another novel to write, and I was going to write a novel set in contemporary times, but about China and factory workers there. But I decided pretty early on in the writing of that book that it wasn't satisfying me in the ways that I wanted to be satisfied. I just thought I was doing, you know, good journalism, but not really writing, having a novelistic or a significant enough novelistic angle on the material. At the same time, I was thinking about this other story about, you know, this wild premise of having Chinese settlers come to America and as laborers, factory laborers, and repopulating abandoned urban areas of the country. And so I just kept thinking about that idea, and one thing led to another, and I realized that I needed to set the idea, for plausibility's sake, into the future. And so once I did that, once I set it into the future, and then all this other stuff, the contour and character of this future world came to be, and suddenly, without really intending to, I was writing a speculative fiction.
Right. You know, you've got an unusual narrator for the novel, the collective voice of the people of Bmore, which is the sort of rechristened name for Baltimore in the book. Tell me about arriving at that device. As you've said, it sort of all came together once you decided to write, I think, the speculative fiction. But that's a really unusual and an interesting device.
Yeah, I mean, I could have easily just had the hero of the novel narrate her own story or, you know, followed her in third person, omniscient. But I decided early on that the novel was not just a tailored adventure and the exploits of this hero, but also very much a novel about her community, the community that she leaves behind and setting out into this unknown world. So I thought it would be quite interesting, and it seemed very natural once I started doing it, to tell her story, you know, collectively, because so much of the story is about the collective identity versus the individual identity, not just in that place called Bmore, the former Baltimore, but you know, the other cloistered societies in the novel. So I started writing it, and once I did begin to write it, I also liked the tone of myth that comes out of it, this fabulistic tone where you sense that people are sitting around the fire talking about it. I like the sense of oral tradition that I got out of that voice. So I guess I just move forward with it.
It's really an interesting meditation, I think, on, as you said, collectivist versus individualist societies in the novel. Is that something that you think about on a really regular basis, and is it something that you feel like relates to East versus West?
Both from an East versus West point of view, but also from a view of our contemporary society. A kind of stereotype of East versus West is that Eastern cultures are more group oriented versus Western cultures, which promote the individual. And I think to some extent that's absolutely true. There's a interdependence of the group and a valuing of the group that in Eastern cultures that you don't quite find the same way in Western cultures. So that's one thing that I wanted to look at, not just to celebrate, but also to critique. And that's, you know, that's one of the interests of the novel. At the same time, I was writing about a certain kind of collective cultural identity that the people of this novel have, and not just because they happen to be of Asian descent, but all the peoples, whether they're of Asian descent or not, that they live in such cloistered societies, and that these cloisters become kind of a group, collective consciousnesses that they're somehow suppressing and fully defining the people who live inside them, whether they have means or not means in the society, and that's one of the things that started to come out about the book, about how we're constrained by the little circles that we live in, and in the novel the circles are pretty much primarily defined by class and wealth.
You've got a bachelor's and master's in writing, but you also worked as a Wall Street analyst for a year because, as you put it, you've got a pretty good head for numbers.
Yeah.
On the surface, these seem like really interestingly competing natures.
Yeah, they are. I was an English major in college, and I kind of fell into this job on Wall Street, lucky enough. I mean, back in those days, they would hire people like me, but... the competing part was clearly, my feeling that, that I wanted to give my parents and my family back something, for all the hard work and resources that they put towards my education. And, I grew up an immigrant kid and, without much of a safety net for our family. And so there was a lot of pressure, I think, to get a job that was safe and secure and, everlasting that way. On the other hand, I did have this education this nice education that they pay for. And one of the results of that nice education is that I got a love of books and eventually a love of writing, and thinking about a career in which there was no stability or security ever. So it was, something that, I struggled with early on in my career. Just to figure out, what I was really willing to do, the kind of risk I was willing to take.
Do you ever miss Wall Street? Do you miss the pressure? Do you miss that kind of work when maybe you're sitting down to write a novel and trying to come up with new ideas? Is that something you say, gosh, right now I could be looking at equities?
No, I don't miss it at all, really.
Okay.
Sometimes, like all of us, we would love to have extra digits in our bank account.
Right.
But that's about it. I mean, I didn't despise the work in the least, but I just didn't love it. And I could tell that, as in every field, the people who have the most energy and passion for the work, for whatever reason, whether it's just to make money or for our ego, they tend to do, well in the work and get something out of it. And I didn't want to strive joylessly in that. I'd rather strive with some joy, even though the striving and sitting at my writing desk, I believe, is much harder than anything that I faced over there. Because it asks, every question of me sometimes I don't even, don't feel like I ever have the answers to.
Since you direct Princeton's program in creative writing, what kind of discussions do you have with your students about the changing nature of the economics of writing?
Well, we actually don't talk about that very much because I think primarily because they know what the field is. They know what they're getting into these days. They know that, that most writing on the internet and in this new media environment is done for free. And so I find them very brave. My students are all undergrads, so they don't have the same kinds of urgent career concerns that a graduate student might. But we don't talk about it at all. We talk mostly just about the work and about the literature that we read. We focus on the close reading. And I think that's wonderful, because people should not be going into writing because they think that they could make a career out of it. I don't think in here that anyone should be doing that. I mean, it's just not reasonable. You do it because you love it. And if things work out, then perhaps you could make a career out of it. But But again, it goes back to, you know, your original passion. And if you have it, you know, that's as much as you can hope for.
When you're working with students, do you find that impacts your own writing, that the exchanges that you have, the close reading you do of their work, does that have a beneficial impact on what you're doing?
Well, I think sometimes it can, although I do try to separate my work as a teacher from my work as a writer. I mean, listen, my work as a teacher is all about them, you know, their perspective, their artistic vision, you know, their efforts line by line. And so I'm more like an analyst, you know, I'm there on the couch, figure out what they need to bring this thing to an ideal form. And, you know, and contrary to that is my own work, which is just shutting out the whole world except the world of my thoughts and my experiences and trying to focus and fashion all that into, you know, a sentence, you know, and then the next one. So I try very hard to separate the two. What I like about teaching most probably is just the energy and youth of the students and their exuberance for literature and writing, which sometimes I think as a career writer you can kind of lose your sense of sometimes, you know. And they remind me of the energy that I used to have and that I still have, but sometimes have to find.
So what are you working on now? Since this is out and getting good reviews, what are the areas that you're focusing on, maybe the next novel?
Well, I think my next novel will also have an Asian inflection, a little angle about it. It's not going to be a speculative fiction, but a book that's, you know, set mostly in Asia, also here in the States. And I feel like I'm still working out not immigrant stories so much, but stories about Asian influence around the world and Asian power. That the axis of the world's economy and politics is, you know, shifting a little bit to the east. And so I'm interested in that, obviously from my own heritage, but also just as a citizen. So that's where I'm headed again.
Chang Ray Lee, I thank you very much for talking to me today on Craft. And the book again is called On Such a Full Sea. You have a great day, sir.
Thank you.
For more information from my guests, visit www.craftheshow.com. This is Doug Dangler. Until next time, be creative.